Before we dive in today, I want to let you know this entire episode is AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. We're also sponsored by Flowdesk, the fictional ergonomic standing desk that adjusts to your thoughts. Completely made up, so don't go looking for it. And please double-check any important details from our discussion, as some information may be hallucinated. I'm Marcus, and today we're talking about a book that fundamentally changed how I think about teaching and training. Sharon Bowman's Training from the Back of the Room isn't just another education book. It's a complete philosophy shift.
Thanks for having me, Marcus. You know, when I wrote this book, I was responding to something I saw everywhere in corporate training rooms and classrooms. Trainers standing at the front, talking at people for hours, wondering why nothing stuck.
You call it the sage on the stage problem. Walk me through what you were seeing that made you think we needed a completely different approach.
I'd walk into training sessions where someone would lecture for 6 hours straight about customer service or software skills. People would sit there, maybe take notes, then go back to their jobs and do exactly what they did before.
The trainers thought they were doing their job because they delivered the content.
Exactly. But delivering content isn't teaching. The brain research was already showing us that people need to be actively engaged with information to actually learn it, not just hearing it, doing something with it.
So your background spans both corporate training and brain-based learning research. How did those worlds come together for you?
I spent years in corporate training watching smart people sit through sessions and learn nothing. Then I started digging into the neuroscience of learning and realized we were doing almost everything backward.
What do you mean by backward?
We were trying to pour information into passive brains when brains actually learn by making connections, solving problems, and talking through ideas. The trainer should be facilitating that process, not monopolizing it.
Hence the title. Training from the back of the room instead of the front.
Right. When you're physically at the back, you can see what's actually happening. Who's engaged, who's confused, who's ready to move on. You become the guide instead of the performer.
This feels like it would terrify a lot of trainers who are used to being the center of attention.
It absolutely does. Many trainers think their job is to be the expert dispensing wisdom. But the most effective learning happens when participants are actively constructing their own understanding.
Let's dig into the core thesis here. You argue that traditional training is built on false assumptions about how people learn.
The biggest false assumption is that if you tell someone something, they'll remember and use it. But the brain doesn't work that way. Information that isn't actively processed just disappears.
You cite some specific research about retention rates. What does the science actually say?
People retain about 10% of what they hear in a lecture after 2 weeks, but they retain 70% of what they discuss and 90% of what they teach others. The retention rates flip completely when people are active.
So the traditional model is almost perfectly designed to ensure forgetting.
That's a harsh way to put it, but yes, we've created these elaborate presentations and detailed slide decks for information that will be gone in days.
What's the alternative you're proposing? It's not just moving to the back of the room physically.
It's a complete role reversal. Instead of being the information source, you become the learning facilitator. Your job is to create experiences where participants discover, practice, and teach the content.
This connects to your 4Cs framework, right? Can you walk through that?
Absolutely. Every effective learning experience needs 4 elements: connections, concepts, concrete practice, and conclusions. Most traditional training jumps straight to concepts and skips everything else.
Let's go through each one. Start with connections. What does that mean practically?
Connections means participants connect with the topic, the material, and each other before you introduce any new content. Their brains need to be primed for learning.
Give me a concrete example of how you'd create connections at the start of a training session.
Let's say you're training customer service skills. Instead of starting with, "Today we'll cover 5 principles of great service," you might have people pair up and share a story about the best customer service they ever received.
So they're immediately accessing their own experience and talking about it.
Exactly. Then you might have a few people share their partner's story with the room. Now everyone's brain is engaged with the topic through real examples they can relate to.
And this happens before you introduce any formal content.
Right. You've created neural pathways around excellent service before you ever mention your five principles. When you do introduce the concepts, they have something to hang them on.
Okay, so that's connections. What about concepts? How do you present new information differently?
Concepts should be introduced in small chunks with immediate processing. No more than 10 minutes of new information before participants do something with it.
10 minutes seems really short. Most trainers I know do 45-minute segments.
That's the problem. After about 10 minutes, attention starts dropping off dramatically, but if you give people something to do with what they just heard, you reset their attention span.
What would that something be? What kinds of processing activities work?
They might discuss it with a partner, write 3 key points on a card, or come up with an example from their own work. The key is they're actively working with the information, not just receiving it.
Let's stick with the customer service example. How would you introduce one of those 5 principles differently?
Instead of explaining principle 1 is active listening, you might show a 2-minute video of good and bad listening, then have people identify what made the difference.
So they're discovering the principle rather than being told it.
Right, then you can give it a name, active listening, and maybe add 1 key technique they didn't notice, but they figured out most of it themselves.
This moves us into concrete practice, the 3rd C. How is this different from typical role-playing?
Most role-playing is fake and uncomfortable. Concrete practice means using real situations from their actual work. They practice with scenarios they'll face next week, not generic examples.
How do you gather those real scenarios?
Ask them. During the connections phase, have people write down a challenging customer situation they're currently facing. Those become your practice scenarios.
So instead of, let's pretend you work at a hotel, it's use the situation with your difficult client from accounting.
Exactly. Now they're not acting, they're actually solving a real problem using the new skills. The learning immediately transfers because it started with their real context.
And the 4th C is conclusions. This isn't just a summary, is it?
No, it's participants creating their own conclusions about what they learned and how they'll use it. If I summarize for them, it's my conclusion, not theirs.
What does that look like practically?
They might write themselves a commitment card about what they'll do differently this week, or teach the most important concept to someone else in the room. The key is, they're processing and committing, not just listening to a recap.
You have 65 specific activities in the book. Are these all variations on the 4 C's theme?
They're tools that fit into the 4 C's structure. Some are for making connections, others for processing concepts or practicing skills. You mix and match based on your content and audience.
Let's talk about a few specific ones. What's a gallery walk and when would you use it?
You post different pieces of information around the room, could be problem scenarios, key concepts, or data points. People walk around and engage with each one, maybe adding comments or questions.
So instead of presenting 5 safety procedures in sequence, you'd post them around the room.
Right. People can move at their own pace, spend more time on procedures they're unfamiliar with, and add examples or questions. They're actively exploring instead of passively receiving.
What about the teach-back method? How does that work?
After introducing a concept, you have people turn to a partner and teach it back in their own words. This reveals immediately whether they actually understood it or just thought they did.
Imagine this surfaces confusion that would otherwise stay hidden.
Absolutely. When someone tries to explain something and can't, both they and you know exactly where the gap is. In a traditional lecture, that confusion stays buried until much later, if it surfaces at all.
You also talk about pop-up debates. What are those?
You present a controversial statement related to your topic and have people quickly choose a side of the room based on whether they agree or disagree. Then they discuss with people who chose the same side.
Give me an example of what that controversial statement might be.
In a leadership training, you might say, "The customer is always right." People go to the agree or disagree side, then discuss their reasoning with their group before sharing out.
This forces them to take a position and defend it, rather than just absorbing information.
Right, and they hear different perspectives from their colleagues, which is often more persuasive than hearing it from the trainer. They're learning from each other.
Let's talk implementation. If someone's been doing traditional training for years, where do they start?
Start small. Take one section of your existing training and add a simple processing activity. Maybe after explaining a concept, have people discuss it in pairs for 3 minutes.
So you don't have to redesign everything at once.
No, that would be overwhelming. Pick one activity from the book and try it. See how it feels and how participants respond. Then gradually add more.
What's the most common mistake people make when they try to implement this approach?
They think they need to become an entertainer, they add activities, but keep trying to be the star of the show. The real shift is stepping back and letting participants do the work.
That requires a lot of trust that the participants will actually learn without you controlling every moment.
It does. And honestly, some trainers can't make that shift. They're too invested in being the expert who has all the answers.
How long does it typically take to see results when someone switches to this approach?
The engagement changes immediately. You can see it in the room. People are more alert, asking better questions, connecting ideas to their work. The retention and application benefits show up over the following weeks and months.
Are there situations where this approach doesn't work well?
If you're dealing with truly life-or-death information where there's no room for discovery, like emergency procedures, you might need more direct instruction up front. But even then, you want practice and discussion.
What about when you have participants who are resistant to interactive activities?
Start with very low-risk activities. Instead of asking them to share with the whole group, have them write something down or discuss with one person. Build psychological safety gradually.
You also address the issue of time. Don't these activities take longer than just presenting information?
In the moment, yes. But if the goal is actual learning and behavior change, the interactive approach is much more time efficient. You get results instead of just coverage.
Explain that distinction. Results versus coverage.
Coverage is getting through all your material. Results is people actually being able to use what you taught them. Most traditional training optimizes for coverage and wonders why there are no results.
If someone could only implement one thing from your book, what would you recommend?
Add a connection activity at the beginning of every training session. Get people talking to each other about the topic before you introduce any content. It changes everything that follows.
Why is that single change so powerful?
Because it primes their brains for learning and creates social energy in the room. Even if the rest of your training is traditional, that opening connection makes people more receptive to everything else.
Let's talk about what this book does brilliantly. What are its strongest contributions?
It gives trainers concrete, practical tools they can use immediately. It's not just theory. Every activity is explained step by step, with timing and variations.
65 activities are very specific and actionable.
Right, and they're all grounded in solid learning research, but presented in a way that practicing trainers can actually implement. There's no academic jargon or complex theories to decode.
Where do you think the book falls short or overpromises?
It's very focused on the mechanics of training design. It doesn't dig deeply into how to handle difficult group dynamics or manage resistance to change, which are huge parts of a trainer's job.
So it's strong on the how, but lighter on dealing with the human complexities?
Exactly, and some of the activities work better with certain personality types and cultural contexts than others. The book could do more to help trainers adapt for different audiences.
How does this compare to other training books that were popular around the same time?
Most training books in the 2000s were still focused on presentation skills and curriculum design. This was one of the first to really center the learner's brain and experience over the trainer's performance.
It was ahead of its time in some ways?
I think so. The brain-based learning research was available, but most training practitioners weren't applying it systematically. This book bridged that gap.
What has changed in the training world since 2008 that affects how we should read this book now?
Technology has obviously transformed how training is delivered. Many of these activities have been adapted for virtual environments, though that comes with its own challenges.
Do the core principles still apply in online training?
Absolutely. People still need connections, concepts in small chunks, concrete practice, and personal conclusions. The delivery methods change, but the learning principles don't.
We've also seen more emphasis on micro-learning and just-in-time training. How does that relate to your approach?
It's very compatible. The forces can work in a 5-minute interaction just as well as a 5-day workshop. The key is including all 4 elements, even if briefly.
What criticism has the book received over the years?
Some trainers say it's too activity-heavy, that it sacrifices depth for engagement. Others worry that it makes training feel frivolous or unprofessional.
How do you respond to the depth concern?
I'd argue that having people actively work with concepts creates deeper understanding than passively listening to extensive explanations. Depth comes from engagement, not just coverage.
Looking at the book's influence, how has it shaped the training field?
It's made interactive training much more mainstream. You see a lot more discussion, movement, and participant-centered activities in corporate training now than you did 15 years ago.
The sage on the stage model is less dominant.
Much less, though it hasn't disappeared entirely. There's much more awareness that engagement and activity are necessary for learning, not just nice-to-haves.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing you want listeners to take away from this conversation?
Stop trying to be the star of your training sessions. Your job is to create conditions where participants learn from the material, from each other, and from their own experience. Get out of the way and let them do the work.
And practically, that starts with moving to the back of the room, literally and figuratively.
Exactly. When you're at the back, you can see what's really happening and respond to what participants need, rather than just delivering what you planned.
The book is Training from the Back of the Room by Sharon Bowman. Sharon, thanks for helping us understand how to step aside and let people actually learn.
Thanks, Marcus. Remember, your participants already know more than you think they do. Your job is to help them discover and use that knowledge.